you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
So the sinking of the RMS Titanic on April 15th of 1912 is perhaps the most famous of all maritime disasters. But it's not as though that was the first time passengers were cruising on a ship.
Nope.
Well before the Titanic, passengers were traveling across the Atlantic Ocean between Europe and North America. And I know that it might seem like we're travel obsessed lately because we keep talking about our Paris trip, which you can still sign up for if you go to our website and click on the Paris trip link at the top of the page. But this actually came up in a whole other avenue. There is another podcast project I'm working on, which hopefully you will know more about soon. But the subject of cruises came up on it, and it piqued my interest in terms of where it had come from historically. So here we are. I decided I should do a whole episode where I could just look at that on this show. So I thought it would be really interesting to examine the early years of the cruise industry, way before what we think of as a cruise ship today ever existed. They were not floating cities at this point. And we're breaking this one sort of into two sections. So first, we're going to talk about the initial push for ships to start carrying passengers as a part of their business model rather than just an add-on in empty cargo space. And second, the first true cruise ship and its relatively short period of service. For those of you who like maritime disasters, delight. There's a little bit of that involved here. There is also, we should warn you, an instance of suicide. So if that is not something you're comfortable hearing about, be warned. It happens late in the episode, and we will give you a heads up as we near that point. It's actually going to be right after the second sponsor break.
Ships were, of course, carrying cargo across the Atlantic for centuries before the idea of carrying passengers in any sort of vacation sense existed. The man who is often credited with first shifting this mindset is Jeremiah Thompson. By the time Thompson, who was a textile importer, had this idea, he was living in New York, but he had been born in Yorkshire in northern England, and he had made that journey across the Atlantic himself by boat when he emigrated as a teenager.
Yeah, definitely not in any sort of vacation sense. We have talked before about when people would book passage on transatlantic ships just to get from one to the other, and the various ways they have to shove in with parcels and animals and unpleasant conditions. So this was definitely that kind of thing when he made the crossing as a teen. And Thompson, his uncle, and three associates had all been working together in the textile trade in New York, and they owned a number of ships that they used for that purpose. And while their cargo ships, like others, accepted passenger bookings, it was definitely a secondary aspect of their business. Passengers were not prioritized. Everything was basically timed and planned around the goods that were aboard the ship. And as such, schedules were almost always inconsistent, which left would-be travelers in a sort of hurry-up-and-wait situation while the shipping company held departure up for loading more cargo or waiting for ideal weather. But Thompson realized that they could probably make more money by prioritizing passengers, their comfort, and their schedules.
Thompson and his business partners announced their intentions to do just that in the papers of New York in late 1917. Quote, "In order to furnish frequent and regular conveyances for goods and passengers, the subscribers have undertaken to establish a line of vessels between New York and Liverpool to sail from each place on a certain day and every month throughout the year."
This was, on its own, an entirely novel concept. But the notice went on to promote speedy crossings of the North Atlantic, also novel, and, quote, "accommodations for passengers are uncommonly extensive and commodious." So for the first time, a company was offering up the idea of actual comfort while crossing the ocean.
It may have sounded unreal, but Thompson and his associates were professional shippers, after all, and they knew how to run a business. In January of 1818, the first two of their ships departed New York right on schedule, and the company stayed on schedule. It also had to add new ships to meet demand and ended up running two ships each way per month. Their line came to be known as the Black Ball Line because of a black circle painted on their sails to identify them. If you're imagining, even though I just said sails, if you're imagining a thing that looks anything like a steamship, no, this was still a vessel with sails sailing under wind power. There are some images, like illustrations still of these ships, and they do not look like a cruise ship today.
No, not at all. And we'll talk about sort of how steamships eventually supplanted these ships. Yeah, it's interesting, right? The way this setup goes, you would normally expect, like, and then they said it was going to be comfortable, and then they said it was going to be fast, and then they said it was going to be on a schedule. You're like, this isn't going to work, guys. But it did. They were so good at keeping this whole thing together. And part of that was because the management of the company offered incentives to captains to keep those calendar dates. So if they made their trips in less than 22 days traveling from New York to Liverpool, or less than 35 days on the Liverpool to New York trips, which took longer due to wind patterns in the North Atlantic, the captain would get a reward. And for his work, the captain, who was responsible for everything aboard his vessel, got a new coat, and his wife would get a new dress. And this reward system seemed to work because Black Ball got a really good reputation for reliability.
The Black Ball line got a fair bit of press for their new business model and how successful they had been at implementing it. And that gained them new business in both passengers and cargo, which made other shipping companies want to step up their own game to stay competitive. It wasn't okay anymore to simply run supply ships on the, well, we'll leave when we're loaded and arrive when we can approach.
Yeah, initially they were like, why would you want to prioritize passengers? That's just secondary. And then a couple years in, they were like, we would also like to prioritize passengers, please. Soon, other companies were running their own scheduled lines and offering better passenger accommodations. And this, in turn, drove the shipping industry into a more service-minded mode of operation, which then drove physical change in how the ships were built. In 1823, Black Ball once again staked its claim above other competitors when it launched its new ship, the Canada. The 525-ton vessel was lavish in ways no ship had ever been before. It featured things like skylights in the deluxe cabins, silk curtains, Turkish carpets, and a fancy dining room with beautiful furniture, among other luxurious design details.
The Canada's beautiful decor set off a new race among all the shipping companies to offer similar amenities for their passengers. And this desire to offer more sumptuous accommodations and entertainments meant that ship designs had to shift to offer all those things without losing their cargo space. After all, they were still carrying things like mail and textiles and even livestock, some of which were used to feed the passengers aboard in rather fine style.
One of the accounts I was reading talked about the ship's cow. So they always had fresh milk on the crossing and how sometimes, you know, some of the animals would be used to be slaughtered and then used in meals. And they would have chickens that could lay eggs. And that really, this is kind of the beginning of the idea of cruises and food together, because for a lot of people, the food was the best part of the trip because it was all very fresh. A company called the Dramatic Line, run by a man named Edward Knight Collins, gave Blackball a run for its money starting in 1836. Dramatic started building flat-bottomed boats, like the ones that were required to traverse shallow waters at the mouth of the Mississippi River. Collins had been running ships to New Orleans, but he realized that he could use that same flat-bottom design to optimize space for transatlantic voyages.
The ships in the Dramatic fleet were aptly named. They were the Shakespeare, Sheridan, Garrick, Siddons, and Roscius, and they were massive. The Roscius weighed more than 1,000 tons, which was a record at the time for ships that were running out of New York. But it was the passenger cabins that really set the Dramatic Line apart from the Blackball. They were as much as 3 times the size of what other companies offered, and they were higher up on the ship, not below the deck.
Yeah, they felt that passengers would be more comfortable up higher. They would get better air circulation. They would not be as prone to seasickness, which all sounds lovely. Also, we should point out that even though their accommodations were 3 times larger than other ships, they were still tiny. I mean, even if you have been on a modern cruise ship, the rooms are still pretty small unless you are very, very wealthy. And this is, you know, far past these ships in terms of evolution of space. So the idea, though, of a separate steerage class, which you'll often see talked about, formed sort of organically during these decades. If there was a cargo space that wasn't being filled with letters or parcels or other goods, some ships continued to sell reduced fare tickets for people to bunk there without any of the amenities like dining and entertainment that a regular ticket afforded. People who purchased these discounted tickets had to bring their own food, and they were allowed to prepare it in a designated space on deck, so long as they remembered to also bring pans and pots and any other utensils required to do that prep. And this really wasn't all that different from how people had booked passages before the idea of passenger amenities was introduced. It just meant that now there were different levels, both literally and figuratively, of travelers.
In a moment, we will talk about the celebrity status that some of these captains achieve. But first, we will pause for a word from one of our sponsors. I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all 5 of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melanin Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. We mentioned just a few moments ago how Black Ball rewarded its captains with bonuses in the form of coats for jobs well done. And captains actually took on an odd sort of celebrity in the time that the cruise industry was in its infancy. Passengers could actually book passage with specific captains if they wish, and especially skilled ones came to be recognized for their ability to deal with weather issues and manage their crew and socialize with their passengers. This job became a very coveted one for men with the skills to handle all of these different needs, as they also took a share of the revenue for the cargo. So one of the things that was involved was, like, for X pieces of mail, you will get some tiny, tiny fraction of money for each piece of mail. And so they would all get that kind of, like, as a revenue share of their company's work. They also usually owned a portion of the ship in terms of, like, both getting the revenue from it and having responsibility for it. The sailors who worked under them, though, worked very, very hard in jobs that were often very dangerous and sleeping in quarters that were far less comfortable than most of the passengers had.
But traveling aboard this combination cargo and passenger ship, which was called a packet ship or packets, that wasn't the pleasure vacation of today. Even if there was beautiful furniture involved for the people who could afford a premium ticket, while there were normally women's quarters on such vessels, the vast majority of the paying passengers were still men on business. These were generally booked as one-way trips, a way to get to either Europe or North America. And the time aboard the ship was more comfortable than ever, but it was still a means to get to a destination. You were not doing this for fun.
No, it would be like, I'm sure there are people that do it, but very few are like, let's just go get on a plane for fun today. You normally have a place in mind where you're trying to get to.
Yeah.
And if the plane ride is enjoyable, great. But that's not really your vacation. Even so, these transatlantic crossings were growing in number, with dozens of ships traveling from New York to Liverpool, London, and Le Havre, and staying on schedule became more and more important because it became a means for the various operating companies to distinguish themselves. I know I just compared it to the airline industry, but again, very similar, where you will hear airlines tout their stats for, like, not canceling flights or always arriving on time, very similar. And the U.S. was building a very strong reputation for its excellence in this industry.
Part of that strong reputation was a very small rate of accident or loss. In the first 20 years of this industry, there were only two ships lost. The first of this was the Albion, which was part of the Black Ball line. On April 22, 1822, 3 weeks after leaving port in New York, the Albion, under the command of Captain Williams, ran aground and slammed against rocky terrain on the southern coast of Ireland, really early in the morning, sometime between 3 and 4 a.m.
7 of the Albion's 24-man crew survived, and 2 of the 28 passengers. But everyone else aboard died. And the cause in this case was bad weather. A written account by a local man named John Purcell described the situation when he arrived on the scene shortly after the ship hit the rocks. And he wrote, quote, "At this time, as it blew a dreadful gale, with spring tide and approaching high water, the sea ran mountains high." Mr. Purcell and several other men were able to get the survivors to safety. He describes in this account that he took in a number of them, and the other men that were with him each took in a number of people. And they also built coffins for the bodies of the recovered dead.
The second ship lost in the transatlantic passenger and cargo business was called the Crisis. It's the name of the ship, which was part of the Black X line. In the case of the Crisis, it was making its way back to New York in 1826, and it just never made it to port. Somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean, it presumably sank. Although these two incidents were obviously tragic, the work of the packet ships traveling between Europe and the United States was seen as very safe because it was only those two.
The second half of the 19th century saw massive growth in passenger bookings on transatlantic lines. The idea of truly premium accommodations started to come into play, and steamships became the standard. Up to that point, all of the tightness of schedules was largely about leaving port on time, but things were still a little bit wiggly when it came to making port on the other end of the journey on a schedule because, as Tracy had mentioned earlier, you're still using wind power largely. And once the reliance on wind was less of a factor, comings and goings were more precise at both ports on any given cruise.
Now we're going to jump ahead a bit to 1900. That year, the world's first steamer, built exclusively as a tourist ship with no intent of hauling cargo or mail, was launched at Hamburg, Germany. The ship was the Prinzessin Victoria Louise, and it was part of the Hamburg American line. It was christened by the Countess von Waldersee, née Esther Lee, who had married German Army Field Marshal Count von Waldersee.
The idea for the Prinzessin Victoria Louise began with Albert Ballin. In 1886, Ballin had joined the company HAPAG, you'll see that H-A-P-A-G, which is an acronym for a much longer German name that I dare not attempt for for desire to not turn it into a horrible jumble of words. And that is sometimes synonymous with, you'll sometimes see it written as that company running the Hamburg America line or just being synonymous for it. And the HAPAG company's business included a great deal of emigration travel. As people left Europe to move to the United States, the Hamburg Victoria line transported them. And that company started in 1847 and initially used sailing boats like the packet ships used by the Black Ball line and its competitors, but eventually they, like everyone else, transitioned over to steamships.
Albert Ballin, who had an emigration agency as a family business, was a perfect fit for HAPAG. He worked his way up the corporate ladder and in 1899 became the head of the company. At the beginning of the 1890s, he had initiated the world's first leisure cruise, which was a trip along the Mediterranean aboard the SS Auguste Victoria. This was the first time the journey aboard a passenger ship was billed as the vacation itself. Ballin himself was a passenger on the Auguste Victoria, and he interviewed the customers aboard to see what was working and what could be changed.
Yeah, so just for clarity, in case it's confusing, that ship was still the type of ship that had originally been built to carry cargo and passengers, but this was the first time that it was used as just a vacation in and of itself. And then this next ship that we're talking about is the first one that was built entirely just as a passenger cruise ship. So as he took control of the company, Ballin came up with another first, and that was a ship that was entirely designed and built for passengers. The Hamburg America line commissioned the shipbuilding firm of Blohm and Voss to construct what is often called the first purpose-built cruise ship. Thus, the Prinzessin Victoria Louise, named for the 8-year-old daughter of Kaiser Wilhelm II, came to be, and Ballin, who oversaw the entire project very closely from design to completion, became the father of the leisure cruise.
This ship was huge. It was 400 feet or 122 meters long, 47 feet or 14.3 meters wide, and 27 feet or 8.2 meters deep. It was also 4,419 gross tons, which measures not weight but internal volume. The hull was made of steel plates flush fitted with countersunk rivets rather than overlapped.
Yeah, it was built like a luxury vehicle, basically. Also, I should point out, in looking at various different records, those numbers in its length and width and depth are a little bit different depending on which one you look at. I'm not sure what the cause for that disparity is, but it's always small disparities. So if you look at it anywhere else and are like, that's not quite the same number, that's why. I can't explain why that's the case, but we see it in different numbers all over the place. And as a cruising yacht, this ship was designed, as we said, entirely for leisure, and every aspect of it was completely modern for its time. In addition to having cabins that were well ventilated, which had been a long-term problem on passenger ships, it featured a massive dining room, a smoking lounge, a parlor for lady passengers, a dark room for any travelers that wanted to develop their vacation photos there on the ship, and a gymnasium, among other amusements and amenities. And it carried only first-class passengers.
After it made its initial voyage from Hamburg to New York, the Prinzessin traveled to the Caribbean and then to the Mediterranean and the Black Sea. Eventually, the ship's primary route was from New York to Jamaica, offering a tour of the West Indies. On December 12th, the Prinzessin Victoria Luise left New York, bound for Kingston, Jamaica, with Captain H. Brunswick at the helm. While the ship boasted 120 cabins, there were only 75 passengers aboard.
And before we get into the story of how that cruise played out, we are going to pause for a break and hear from one of the sponsors that keeps Stuff You Missed in History Class going.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all 5 of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing 5-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory 5-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All that available at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel for for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road trip or waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. Listeners, as we get into this next section, I just want to remind you, this is the segment where we will talk about the suicide we mentioned at the top of the show. So if that's not something you want to hear, you can maybe fast forward to the very end or just skip this last part.
What happened on the Princess and Victoria Louise's trip was initially reported this way. The ship made port at its destination as scheduled and then headed back to New York. On December 16th, it ran aground just below the lighthouse at Port Royal as it was exiting Kingston Harbor. There was no inclement weather. The waters were smooth and calm.
All of the passengers were safely evacuated to Kingston. Two other ships, the Duguay-Trouin of France and the Bremen of Germany, were nearby and quickly moved to the scene to help. Though those on board initially had been afraid, once they were reassured that they were going to be moved to land, the evacuation went completely smoothly.
But despite everything post-grounding going as smoothly as possible, Captain Brunswick locked himself in the cabin and shot and killed himself. It's really not clear exactly what happened to the cabin, but his employers were completely taken aback. In a statement given by the president of the Hamburg America Line, Emil L. Boas, he said, quote, "Captain Brunswick was one of the most capable captains in our service. I cannot account for his act, except on the theory that his pride was crushed by the accident and that he believed that only death would wipe out what he regarded as a disgrace."
But a follow-up to this story, published on December 29th, 1906, in the New York Times, offered a slightly different version of events. As you know, even in today's modern world where communication is much faster, sometimes when you get the breaking news story, all of the facts aren't entirely correct, and then later on, there's like an amended story where everything kind of gets smoothed out and the reality is described. This is kind of what happened in this case. This version had been relayed by survivors once they had returned to New York aboard the steamship Sarnia.
The accounts of those who had been aboard all indicated that the ship had been entering the harbor and not exiting, as had initially been reported. Captain Brunswick, upon approaching the harbor, issued signals indicating that the ship needed a pilot.
So a maritime pilot, in case you don't know, and this job still exists, is a person who serves as sort of a navigation expert and advises captains on maneuvering through spots like port entries and exits. The pilot is normally local to the area, so they would be someone that is like on standby at a port entry because they then know all the specifics of the waters of that area intimately, and they use that knowledge in advising ships and guiding them safely.
But though Brunswick requested a pilot, nobody came. So he decided to anchor near Port Royal rather than try to navigate into the harbor without assistance. But in doing so, he misread the lights on the shore, and he accidentally headed straight for the lighthouse.
Yeah, apparently he thought the lighthouse he was seeing was a different lighthouse. So he was just completely oriented mentally incorrectly in the map in his head, and he basically literally ran it right aground. According to the ship's steward, F.O. Schroeder, it was 9:30 p.m. on the night of the 16th when this happened. The captain immediately sent out a boat to report what had happened and went directly to his quarters where he shot himself. And this countered an earlier report that made it sound like the captain had waited a couple of hours before he took that final step.
The passengers were kept on board through the night. They weren't informed of the captain's death. And in the morning, the crew formed a line of boats to the island. Passengers went from boat to boat along the line to get safely to shore.
The Bremen, that German vessel we mentioned earlier, tethered itself to the grounded Prinzessin and actually tried to haul it off of the rocks and back into the water. But that effort was ultimately unsuccessful. 3 days after the wreck, on December 19th, the Hamburg America Line ship was deemed a loss.
In 1907, a German court determined that Captain Brunswick had been negligent in his duties.
And the loss of the Princess and Victoria Louise, which, again, all passengers survived, was completely eclipsed by the sinking of the Titanic less than 6 years later. But the cruise industry, despite having ups and downs, has survived despite these tragedies, and in fact thrived. In 2017, an estimated 25.8 million people went on cruises globally. And a study cited in the 2018 Cruise Industry Overview, which is published by the Florida Caribbean Cruise Association, estimated that an average cruise ship pulling in at a port of call in the Caribbean or Latin America generates almost $676,000 just by virtue of pulling in and spending a few hours there in spending by passengers, crew, and the cruise line.
Yeah, it's complicated. I've been on a number of cruises. And often there will be conversations among the people who are going of like, what's the environmental impact of this? Is that offset by like the economic benefit that's coming into the Caribbean? How does that economic benefit affect the lives of people that actually live there? We have a lot of very lengthy conversations about all of that. And also like it. We have talked about like people continued to go on these in spite of this incident. People also continue to go on cruises, even though norovirus is such a known hazard on cruises, that there's like a whole procedure when you are embarking on the ship where like you have to attest the fact that you have not been ill in the past however many hours. Yeah,
I have not been on a cruise. I have been at sea many times, like deep sea fishing, but I have not been on a cruise. I think that may be about to change. We'll see, and I'll report back.
I'm very curious about how this goes, because I have had some conversations about cruising and pros and cons.
It's
and
not the cruise you think it is.
Okay.
Which helps get around my problem. My problem, right, is that you're on a ship. I would most likely do, like, a Disney cruise. That's not actually the one I'm looking at the moment. And while I love Disney, like, the idea of being trapped on a boat with a bunch of little people, you know, kids, makes me a little nervous because I'm not a kids person. And once I reach my threshold, there's no return. Like, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. And so I'm a little concerned about that. But I found a cruise that I doubt many children would be on. Just because of its theming, which is not filthy in any way. It just has to do with such an old, nerdy pop culture property that I don't think any kids would be interested.
I know whenever we mention our likes and dislikes on the show, we get a lot of ideas from listeners. I'm just going to put it out there. Holly and I have already talked about how cruise ships have lots of entertainments for children and there are lots of adults-only spaces on them.
Yes, but I have also had friends who are very much aligned with me mentally who are like, oh, no, you can't escape them. So until it's totally partitioned off, this will always be a danger.
Yeah.
And I bet your kids are the best ones, but I'm just not comfortable around kids. It's no diss on the kids. It's just not my space of comfort. And when I'm on vacation, I would like to be as much as possible in my space of comfort.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is the scoop. Do you want to hear some listener mail that has nothing to do with cruises, but does go back to our slightly grown-up topic of the history of vodka?
I sure do, because we've gotten some great email about vodka.
Really great email, more than I can read all in one thing. But what I really liked is we got several interesting ones. We talked in that episode about how vodka is to some degree sort of a universal solvent. It gets used to clean and disinfect things, and it gets used to spruce up clothing in lieu of dry cleaning sometimes, and you know, various treatment for ills. And so we had a number of people write in with new things that I did not always know about that vodka gets used for. One of them is from our listener, Peggy, who writes, love the podcast, listen every day. I am learning for knowledge's sake, not so I can just pass a test, which to me is like the best way to learn knowledge. And she writes, my daughter is an amazing cake decorator. She backs this up with a beautiful photograph of a cake that her daughter made. Self-taught, who likes to work with fondant. And she uses vodka to smooth out her designs. I'm including a picture of one of her creations, a Finding Nemo-themed birthday cake for a child. Thanks again for all you do to make my boring job wonderful. I did not know about this trick of using vodka to smooth fondant, but you better believe I'm going to use it going forward because I get in wrestling matches with fondant and make an ugly mess. We also got one from our listener, Gregory, who wrote, I hope you're staying warm. I'm up in Wisconsin where the snow won't stop coming. I'm relatively warm here in Atlanta. It's not a sweltering heat wave, but we've been in the 50s, which is fine. Tracy's probably colder than I am.
It snowed here yesterday.
And Gregory writes, your vodka episode reminded me of when I was studying abroad in Kyrgyzstan, and one of my host families gave me a vodka remedy for my sore throat. In the cold room I slept in with my host brother, I was given a cold towel soaked in vodka as a local cure for my sore throat. It did not help, but it was an interesting experience nonetheless. Thank you for that info. Good to know you can skip the vodka-soaked towel around your throat. And then perhaps my very favorite of these surprising uses of vodka is from our listener, Allison, who writes, Dear Holly and Tracy, thank you so much for the wonderful podcast. It makes my commutes to and from work much more entertaining and makes up for missing out on a lot of history classes in favor of science classes during much of my schooling career. I just listened to your episode on vodka, and I wanted to add a fun fact from my own field, which is veterinary medicine. For as long as I've been in the field, every clinic I've ever been at has always had a bottle of vodka tucked away in a cupboard, and why it's there has become one of the favorite questions to answer for new people in the field. Vodka, when diluted and given intravenously to a patient suffering from antifreeze toxicity, can save their life. It prevents the creation of the byproducts which will cause organ failure and make the antifreeze so deadly. This can technically be done with any ethanol, but the favorite I've encountered has been vodka or perhaps Everclear. And yes, in case you were wondering, patients get instantly drunk when this treatment starts. Looking forward to see what's coming up next and hope you're having a wonderful start to 2019. I never, ever, ever had heard this story, which is surprising to me because I have known a lot of veterinarians and I always ask them a lot of invasive questions about their jobs because I find it fascinating. Never learned this one. So thank you, Allison. Brand new. Also, obviously, we are not suggesting you do any of this yourself, but that's a good little piece of info to have. If you would like to write to us with your surprising use for vodka or any other historically interesting tidbits, you can do so at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. You can also find us pretty much anywhere on social media as Mist in History. And you can go to mistinhistory.com to find our webpage, which is where you can sign up for that trip to Paris. Again, Paris trip at the top with an exclamation point takes you right to all the info. Or you can listen to any of the back episodes that have ever existed of our show for all time, long before Tracy and I were ever involved with it. And we encourage you to also subscribe to Stuff You Missed in History Class. You can do that on the iHeartRadio app, at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.